tonight on Arena. We look at the man who launched Oasis, Alan McGee, and David Brophy on the life and work of Igor Stravinsky. You can text us on 51551 or tweet at RTE Arena. Igor Stravinsky is one of the most significant and most influential composers of the 20th century. Born in 1882, his music spanned a huge range of styles, perhaps reflecting the diversity of his travels and nationalities, beginning with Russian, then French, and finally American. Next Tuesday, April the 6th, marks the 50th anniversary of the death of Igor Stravinsky in New York at the age of 88. And just a few days later, on Friday, April 9th, conductor David Brophy will join forces with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra for a live stream concert from the National Concert Hall featuring some of Stravinsky's great works. Also on the programme, the very joyful and intricate Strings Astray from Belfast composer Elaine Agnew, which I know you will enjoy a little later on. But now David Brophy is with me to speak about the programme. David, let's start with Igor Stravinsky. First of all, what a remarkable life, legacy he had. We think of him as the composer of The Rite of Spring, which was so groundbreaking. But you're looking work a little later in his career. Can you just track his life after Russia?
Yeah, Kay, it's interesting because I suppose without COVID-19, we probably would be looking at the larger works like you mentioned there, The Rite of Spring and the early ballets like Petrushka and The Firebird, which called for huge orchestral forces. But he wrote for small ensembles his entire life, and the works we're going to play next week, next Friday from the National Concert Hall, they're all actually chamber works, and they're probably works that we probably wouldn't perform if we weren't in the middle of a global pandemic, because you're more inclined to play the big, well-known works. I mean, the works... Two of the works that we're going to play, the Danse Concertantes and Dumbarton Oaks, were written. One was written just before he left Europe in 1939 to go to America, and that was Dumbarton Oaks. And when he got to America, one of the earlier pieces he wrote in America was the Danse Concertantes, which he wrote in the early 1940s. And they're both for quite small ensembles. Dumbarton Oaks was written for a commission, actually a commission from a couple, Mr. and Mrs. Bliss, would you believe, who were celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary. And they had an estate, they had a house in Washington, D.C. called Dumbarton Oaks. And they commissioned Stravinsky to write a piece to celebrate the 30th wedding anniversary, which I kind of love the idea that you would do that for your 30th wedding anniversary. And it kind of sums up a little bit his life at the time. He'd gone through quite a tragic phase. His daughter had died at the end of 1938, and his wife and his mother had died within months of each other in 1939. So he was very keen, apart from the impending war, he was very keen to get out of Europe and to start a new life in America. And he was keen to take on commissions. And you're a job in composer, you got to put food on the table. I like the notion that he took commissions from all angles before he went to America.
So we listened to a little bit of from Dumbarton Oaks. This is the first movement, the Tempo Giusto, and it's the English Chamber Orchestra conducted by Sir Colin Davis. So that's Dumbarton Oaks by Igor Stravinsky. It's very upbeat, isn't it, David?
I love it. It's so innocent and playful. I mean, Stravinsky, you know, spent his entire career constructing music out of small groups of notes. Like, he would take melodies and he might take three notes and repeat the three notes for a few times here, and then he'd add another note on and you'd hear four notes the next time. It's almost like, I always think it's like building Lego. You're using Lego blocks to build pieces of music, where you've got one Lego block has like four little dots, another block has six dots, and each dot represents a note. Yeah. And he constructs these beautiful tapestries, and it's always playful. I mean, it's the one thing he lived until he was, as you said earlier on, he lived until he was 88, but he has this childlike quality his entire life, and you get the impression that, you know, when you listen to Stravinsky's music, he's actually at play, and it is very upbeat, and it always puts a smile on my face.
Yes. So could we go back to these things you call the miniatures, which are more or less exercises for the fingers, and then he builds orchestral work on top of that?
Yeah. In like a lot of composers throughout the 20th century and today, they, you know, they're all aware of how important teaching is and them being seeing themselves as pedagogues as well. So in 1921, Stravinsky wrote a series of small miniature pieces for young piano players, and I think the official title was called The Five Fingers, and if anybody who's played piano, you'll realise how, you'll understand how difficult it is with your right hand to do what's called a turn, where you're playing a scale and you've got to move your thumb under your third finger. So he wrote a series of pieces where all the melodies were only had five notes, so you just put your hand in the position on the piano where it's in and your hand stays in that position for the whole piece. It's kind of cute, so it means you don't have to turn into awkward positions. And the pieces existed for over 40 years, and in 1962 he decided to orchestrate them for a small ensemble. And they were like, if the piece, there's eight in total of these miniatures that started out as five piano pieces that he orchestrated for an ensemble of 15 players. And the last one was like a tango, and a lot of them build on, they take on nursery rhymes or dance kind of themes. So again, childlike play is at the centre of these pieces too.
Okay, we'll play some of them. Introduce us to the Andantino.
The Andantino, like as I said, the last, obviously he's got different, you know, pieces to them, and they're all the pieces are like, in total it takes 6 minutes to play the eight, mm-hmm. the eight pieces, so they're all about like 45 seconds each. The Andantino's got super legato melody on top, and it's, I just love the word he creates in this.
That's one of those Stravinsky instrumental miniatures. That's the Andantino. And that's played by the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. Was he in Los Angeles at this time?
He moved around, Kay. He mm-hmm. was in Hollywood for a while. He was in Los Angeles for a while. He went to America. He went to fulfill a contract at Harvard University to occupy the Charles Eliot Norton Chair of Poetry, where he gave six fantastic lectures on music in general, and that was actually his first contract, the reason he went to America in 1939. So he moved around America a bit, but he was in LA for quite a bit.
And did Hollywood come calling? Did
he actually did meet Disney, and he did when Disney was looking at producing Fantasia. I mean, Walt Disney was an amazing man in terms of reaching out across all sorts of cultures, and Walt Disney himself believed that, you know, so-called high art could be taken and could be understood by everybody, which I obviously believe to this day as well is the case. And he did court with Stravinsky. Now, their dealings, I don't think were necessarily smooth, and I think Stravinsky possibly needed, obviously he needed money to live and that, you know, but he was courted to some extent by Hollywood.
Okay, we'll listen to another one of them. This is Allegretto. They are very cinematic, aren't they?
Yeah, they're just so innocent. You know, I always get the impression he was so innocent himself. Like when he went to America first, he was really grateful to America for taking him in, as it is when he got citizenship, and for what America did to his life. You know, like, and he actually innocently went off and arranged the Star Spangled Banner as a kind of a gift of gratitude for America, which of course, if anyone knows their law, that's illegal. You can't just take the Star Spangled Banner and arrange it. And he was arrested, and if you go online, you can actually see his mugshot when he was arrested after he was arrested. But he actually, after he was arrested, he continued to perform the piece. He gave it at like 30 concerts after he was arrested. And I just love the fact that he seems to be for his whole life his own man, you know. But nevertheless, that, you know, that I think utterly beguiling childlike, you know, you can see him like in his, like in 1962, when he orchestrated those 8 miniatures, he was 80 years of age. And to write that, like, you know, he might as well have been 8 years of age when he listened to that music. It's so playful and joyful and jumping around. I love it.
Yes, and after the life he had, like fleeing communist Russia, dealing with the Belarus in his day, I mean, he had some life, and to be so playful and childlike
but
in
he
his
was,
later
he
years.
Seemed to have, like, if you watch documentaries on him online, he was had endless energy. Like, he was conducting, you know, well into his 80s. And I mean, actually, he came to Dublin in 1963. So he visited Dublin the year after he orchestrated the 8 miniatures. And he was still travelling, like, into his 80s, going around the world, conducting. Like, he conducted Symphony of Sams here in Dublin in 1963. And I just think, like, players who played under him, if you look at documentaries online from, you know, yeah, they talk about his energy. A man in his 80s who just would not stop. He was irrepressible. I think that energy can be heard in all his music.
I think we should play the third one, because this is the Tempo di Tango. Can you see the Rite of Spring, Stravinsky, in any of this?
It's there,
David?
All the way through it.
It isn't,
Kay.
It? Isn't there a bit of a...
everywhere. Like, it's, yeah, in all of those little short pieces, the fact he uses tiny little cells. I mean, I couldn't see myself doing a tango to that necessarily. It's definitely a tango through Stravinsky's eyes, you know.
Yes.
But you get it coming through at the end. And obviously the Rite of Spring, all the techniques he employed in the Rite of Spring, even though it's such a huge piece, I mean, it needs 103 players to play the Rite of Spring. Rite of Spring. It's a huge orchestra for the Rite of Spring. But you can hear the technique he uses, and the way his ways with melody, and how he turns melodies back on themselves, and maybe takes a note out here, adds a note in there, and the sounds in terms of, you know, tapping your foot are constantly shifting. You can't necessarily get to grips. You're always trying to chase where the music is, and they were the same techniques he used from the very beginning in his early ballets, the Rite of Spring included.
So that's Stravinsky, but we're going to finish up with the music that's going to open your programme by the brilliant Belfast composer Elaine Agnew. Tell us about Strings Astray.
Well, I mean, Elaine actually fits in this programme really well, because I've known Elaine for, I'm sure, about the guts of 30 years now. And she's a great spirit. Every time I meet Elaine, I mean, she never ages. She's a child in herself. She always has been a child. And her music has, you know, very actually similar energy to Stravinsky's music. It's not quite as, it doesn't move in the same melodic way. But Strings Astray actually really fits this program very well. And I mean, I'm sure she didn't write Strings Astray with Stravinsky necessarily in mind. But I think in some ways, you know, the little I know of Stravinsky, but the awful lot I know about Elaine Agnew, they are kindred spirits. They are eternally youthful people. There's a Tiernanoga quality to everything that we're going to play next Friday with the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra, and Strings Astray certainly is well included in that programme.
We're going to play some of Strings Astray now. Tell us what to look out for.
This does exactly what it says in the tin. I mean, I think the section you're going to play is from the very end of Strings Astray. You'll get the playfulness immediately, but there's maybe a bit more of an edge to the consistency of sound here, that Stravinsky's music moves a little bit more, whereas Elaine's has more of a laser line quality, which you'll hear in this extract now.
Strings Astray there by Elaine Agnew. It must be a lovely piece to both play and conduct, David.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I've never conducted before. It's my first time at it this week, but I know the piece for a long time.
Right, and so how are you rehearsing?
Good question. I mean, I know they've been back for the RTE National Symphony Orchestra have been back for the past few weeks. I haven't been with them since a live stream in December. I think I did some Beethoven with them then. So yeah, we rehearsed on the stage of the National Console. Obviously, there's no audience there. Everyone's socially distanced. Everyone's, I think, 2 meters apart, maybe even longer, maybe further than 2 meters apart. Everyone has masks on, apart from the woodwinds and the horns, for obvious reasons. And they've got Perspex screens around them. And I have a mask on, and everyone feels like we're a million miles away from each other. And it's, I know, we started doing some live streams last September after many months of not being able to do anything. The first thing that we noticed it was difficult was trying to hear everybody, because you're so far away from everybody and you're used to like being close together. If you sit in the middle of an orchestra, you've got sound coming from all directions, and then suddenly, you know, you kind of feel a lot of, particularly string players, I think they feel like they're playing on their own. They're kind of in the middle of nowhere. Where's everybody? I'm used to sharing a music stand with my desk partner, you know. So everyone, all the string players have their own music stand. Normally they share stands. And so it's a bit different.
And do you find it difficult to conduct with being restricted by having the mask on?
I find it difficult to conduct anyway, Kay. this is lifelong learning for me, you know. I wouldn't say it's difficult. I'd say it's just different. And yeah, I think we all have to listen differently, you know. And I think at times, you know, where, you know, you'd find, there's sometimes when I find the orchestra in the current setup we have, that you might call it the COVID setup, you know, they kind of need a bit more help, as this is where things are, because they can't hear each other. And other times, if we weren't in this COVID setup, they could just play things on their own without me. I wouldn't get in the way, you know. I spend most rehearsals trying to work out, when do they actually need me, and when can I step back and they can do things themselves, you know. So.
And when you're deciding what to play, like for this concert series, yes, now, do you sit around a table with the other music people and say, how many musicians can we get away with certain pieces by Stravinsky?
God, Kay, I love your questions. These are questions I can't answer at all, because, well, I know for these concerts, since the live stream started happening last September, obviously there are meetings between management at the RTE National Symphony, yeah, Orchestra and the National Concert Hall, because, you know, there's so many protocols, and we're all hyper careful to do the right thing here. No one wants to put anybody in any risk here. So there are, and these are meetings that I'm not privy to, actually. So they just kind of ring me after and say, yes, we've got a meeting and we can get this number of players on stage. And actually, it's not as simple as that. Actually, we're actually only allowed a certain number of people in the building, in the entire building, the National Concert Hall. I think we're only allowed 40 people in the entire building.
Yes, that's in the entire
concert hall.
Concert
in the entire,
yeah,
building. So even when people tune into to the live stream on Friday week at 7 p.m, there are people who are not on stage who are part of our cohort of 40 people. So I think we can get maybe 34 on stage. I think maybe I've got that wrong,
right.
Maybe 30, 34, around that, and so that obviously dictates what we can play, because we can't play the big stuff, the Rite of Spring, with 103 players, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Well, it sounds a fantastic programme. David Brophy, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Kate.
Thank you. David Brophy will be conducting the RTE National Symphony Orchestra in a live stream concert from the National Concert Hall, featuring the work of Igor Stravinsky and Irish composer Elaine Agnew. That takes place at 7 p.m. on Friday, April 9th. It will be live streamed on rte.ie/culture and broadcast live on RTE Lyric FM.